This is All About Living with Carol Colby. All About Living is brought to you by Gunderson Funeral Home Cremation Care, Turville Bay MRI and Radiation Oncology Center in Madison, Home Health United, The Medicine Shop Monona, Independent Living, All About Living with Carol Colby.
And good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to All About Living. Always a pleasure to have you with us. What a gorgeous, gorgeous day. And I hope that you've had a chance to get to one of the farmers markets. Of course, we have the beautiful one downtown. And I think we're all getting ready for the big biking adventure with Lance Armstrong's coming tomorrow. And it's going to be really exciting around the square in Madison. But in addition to that, a little bit of advice to pass along. We have these wonderful farmers markets in Madison, and it's gorgeous, gorgeous weather. And we have them throughout Wisconsin. But be sure to eat local, buy local. And we have the opportunity to do that. It's not only really good for us, it's good for our economy. And when we read about the salmonella outbreak with the eggs around the nation, I think 23 states now are affected. It's really important that we know where our food comes from. And just a little piece of advice, a couple years ago, I saw the movie Food Inc. And I believe it should be out on video now. It's certainly not in the movie theaters. But if you go to see that movie or rent that movie, you will gain a lot of understanding about our food production in the United States. And it gives you some good guidelines on how to begin making selections. Because it's difficult to know when you go to the store and should I or shouldn't I or how do I know where this food came from? Well, that movie gives a little bit of insight. So that's just my little tip for the day. With this beautiful weather, no doubt a lot of you are moving around, and that leads us into what our topic of discussion is today. As we move around more and at all ages now, but particularly as we get older, things start to hurt a little bit, and bones and joints and aches and pains start to creep up over the body. And we're going to talk about that and some of the very sophisticated things that can be done to prevent and correct the situation. I am so pleased to have in the studio today. I was just checking. Jason, are you there? Jason, our producer, is here. The sound doesn't seem quite right, and I just want to make sure that we're actually broadcasting with the right sound over the air. But Dr. Richard Ilgen is here, and Dr. Ilgen is a board-certified in orthopedic surgery, and he specializes in adult reconstructive surgery of the hip, knee, and shoulder. And he is here at UW Health, at UW Hospital and Clinics, but he didn't start out here. We were talking just before we went on the air, and he got his undergraduate degree from Notre Dame. That had to be a fun experience. I've been to that campus, and it's just a phenomenal campus to take the tour and Touchdown Jesus, is that right?
Touchdown Jesus, absolutely.
Right, right.
Yeah, the residents I train get sick of hearing me talk about Notre Dame, but it is a wonderful place, and yeah, we're obviously very excited about our new football coach, and the first home game will be just in a couple weeks here. So Brian Kelly's the new Notre Dame coach, and we're quite excited optimistic about the future.
And I bet from your professional perspective, you're looking at what kind of coaching is he doing and what kind of training are the athletes into.
So, sure, yeah. You know,
so that they stay healthy.
Keep them healthy.
Staying healthy is really a key thing as to whether you have a winning football team or not.
No question about it. Yeah. No matter where you play, whether it's with the Badgers or the Irish, keeping your team healthy is very, very important.
Right. And there are actually sports medicine doctors that are assigned to the team and work with the team and sit on the sidelines.
That's absolutely correct. Jeff Baer is an orthopedic surgeon, one of my partners at the University of Wisconsin, and he takes care of the Badgers, and they spend a fair amount of time keeping those guys healthy.
Yeah. Dr. Ilgen's background is formidable. Besides graduating from Notre Dame, he attended and graduated from medical school at the University of Chicago, the Pritzker School of Medicine, and got his internship at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston, then went on for his residency at Harvard University, a fellowship at Madison General Hospital, and received his board certification in orthopedic surgery. So that took a lot of years. You're almost ready for Social Security or Medicare by the time you get through that level of training.
It is quite a long process, mm-hmm. but I think in order to provide the best level of care, having specialized training can be quite helpful. The To evaluate and treat patients with arthritis is truly a privilege, and it's a wonderful profession.
How did you end up here in Madison at UW?
I finished my fellowship at Massachusetts General Hospital with a person who did the first hip replacement in this country, Bill Harris, and his whole group there. As I was trying to decide where to set up my practice, I grew up in the Midwest. I grew up in Chicago, and my grandfather was from the Madison area. So many summers of positive experiences on Lake Mendota, learning how to water ski, and great experiences in Madison. And the former chairman at the University of Wisconsin was stepping down, was finishing his career. And there was an opportunity to come here and to take over as the director of the joint replacement program. And I've been here since August of 2000. So for about a decade, I've had the pleasure of working at the University of Wisconsin and in joint replacements.
This is a growing field, isn't it? I read somewhere where, 40% of primary physicians who refer to a specialist, it's in the area of joint and pain.
Absolutely. One of the most common reasons patients present to their primary care physician is related to musculoskeletal complaints. And the evaluation and treatment of those problems is, as you might imagine, quite important. When non-operative care is no longer successful, referral to an orthopedic surgeon to try and determine what are your options to try and improve your quality of life is extraordinarily important. Just by way of background, if you look at the number of total knee replacements performed in the United States every year, it has been growing steadily for about 20 years. And last year, about 800,000 total knee replacements were done in the United States alone, and nearly 500,000 hip replacements. So this is a very, very prevalent disease, and one in which that requires surgical intervention fairly frequently. It's one of the most commonly performed procedures in the Medicare patient population.
Is this because our population is aging?
I think it's a number of different reasons. If you look at the growth on knee replacements, patients often remain active longer than they used to. Obesity is also a factor. If you look at obesity in the United States, the average BMI, or measurement of height to weight, has steadily increased in the United States. And if that's reflected by a growing percentage of patients that are truly in the obese category. And one of the things we know with reasonable certainty is that obesity plays a major role in the development of arthritis of the knee. It's certainly not the only factor, but it is one important factor. So obesity plays a role. Remaining active your entire life for other subsets of patients is also important. And also, I think part of the reason the growth of knee replacements has occurred relates to the fact that knee replacements have gotten better and better and safer and safer. Used to be patients were in the hospital for weeks. Now they're in the hospital for 2 or 3 days. The recovery used to take months to years. Now it's more like weeks to months to get better after a knee replacement. So for all those reasons, patients become more interested in proceeding with knee replacements because they're more durable. And as such, say 20 or 30 years ago, the standard recommendation was wait as long as humanly possible before you have your knee replacement, because it'll likely wear out and then you're going to unfortunately have to have more surgery. Nowadays, it's not to say that you should have your knee replaced at the first sign of symptoms, but I think the reluctance to proceed with surgery when you meet the proper indications for the procedure has decreased substantially, to the point where earlier intervention makes a lot of sense, because you can achieve better outcomes if you don't wait until you're absolutely crippled with the disease. In order to achieve better outcomes, earlier intervention has become more the standard of care.
So the prevalence may be increasing, but medical care is becoming more sophisticated and more able to actually deal with the issue.
And I think in order to achieve more normal function, if patients are given the opportunity to say, this problem is significantly affecting my quality of life, and I've tried a number of non-operative measures, such as physical therapy, pain medication, perhaps ibuprofen or Aleve, those type of medications. And for many patients, that'll manage their arthritic problem and provide a high quality of life for a period of time. But at some point, those non-operative measures are no longer successful. And then they have to decide, are there surgical measures that could help me restore my quality of life? And that's really what this is all about. How can we get people back and on their feet and back to a quality of life that allows them to remain active? And for some patients, that requires surgery, whether that be a partial knee replacement, a total knee replacement, or some other intervention, depends on the status of their disease, how far advanced is the problem. In careful consultation with their orthopedic doctor.
Well, you're replacing all joints now, aren't you? I hear about shoulder replacements, elbow replacements, hips, knees, of course, are the more common ones.
Sure. There are...
Is there any joint of the body that you can't replace now?
That's a good question. there are some joints, interestingly, do better if you fuse them. So, for example, in the foot... If you have a arthritic joint in, say, your big toe, most of those patients end up with fusions. But I would say that that joint replacement in general is the treatment of choice for the majority of your arthritic joints, particularly your high-demand joints, such as your shoulder, your elbow, your hips, your knees. Even ankle replacements have become more and more frequent. And better over time. So by far and away, the most frequently replaced joints are your hip and knee.
What can we do before we get into some of the procedures and certainly the newest sophisticated procedure that you're doing quite a bit with in knee replacement, the partial knee replacement, using the robotics and the robotic arm. But what is there anything that we can do to prevent our joints, our muscular skeleton system from deteriorating?
Sure. I think that probably the most prudent recommendation when it comes to hip and knee arthritis particularly is to maintain an active, healthy lifestyle and try and maintain a body weight that is close to the ideal body weight. And obesity is probably the single most important factor. And if you look at the statistics, starting all the way in childhood, proceeding all forward into adulthood and then into the older age groups, in every one of those subgroups, obesity has increased. And so working with your primary care physician to try and eat right and exercise. I know it sounds boring. It's been around forever. But at the end of the day, that simple set of recommendations could help prevent a lot of arthritis. And not only that, if you do develop arthritis and do require surgical intervention, being close to your ideal body weight can make it easier for you to recover and help lower your risk of complications. So probably that's the most prudent piece of advice. In addition to that, staying active and exercising will help maintain strength of your muscles, strength of your bone, and your ligaments. And so healthy joints do require some exercise.
Kids today are so much more active in sports. And what can parents do to have their kids be active and do all of the healthy things that you're recommending and yet not be injured as a result?
It is interesting in modern society, if you look at, I'm 43 years old, and when I was a kid, the numbers of practices, the intensities of the practices, and the idea that every kid was going to go off and play in Major League Baseball was simply not part of the standard. You went out and played baseball because it was fun, you weren't training as if you were going to go off into Major League Baseball. So I think overuse syndromes definitely are more common now than they were 20 or 30 years ago. And I think the recognition that we need to be more careful about exactly how frequently our kids are playing and the intensity of those practices has allowed us to help prevent some of those overuse syndromes. So,
aren't coaches trained in that to watch out for that?
I think they're much more educated now than they were even a decade ago. So the sports medicine docs have done a great job, and the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgery has placed that as a high priority, trying to maintain healthy opportunities for kids to go out and participate in sports. So I do think not only the coaches, but the docs who take care of them do a much better job now than they did, say, a decade ago with regard to avoidance of overuse injuries, both in male patients and in female patients, because girls are equally likely to have problems compared with their male counterparts. And so, for example, if you look at women who play soccer, for example, soccer has taken over as a sport of choice among young, active kids. Women, particularly in their teenage years, as they go through their growth spurt, can have a higher incidence of ACL injuries. And understanding that and trying to avoid that problem in women athletes is particularly important. Yeah.
So for parents to ask questions of the coach and make sure the coach has been instructed or educated on the levels of how much involvement is good and will make a winner or a champion out of their child versus an injured child.
I think that's really important, is to temper a little bit of the enthusiasm and understand that the purpose of playing sports among kids is many, many, there are many different reasons to do it. But making sure it's fun and not to take it too seriously to the point where somebody ends up suffering overuse injuries at a young age, I think is particularly important.
You mentioned girls versus boys, male, female. I was reading somewhere where there are gender differences, even in adult life and even in the procedures that you do. And how major are the differences between men and women with their bones and their joints?
Well, there are a lot of differences when it comes to, let's take knee replacement, for example. The prevalence of arthritis is slightly higher in women than men in knee arthritis. And then if it gets to a point where, say, you need to have your knee replaced, the shape of the bones is different in men and women. And so the type of implant that you might choose for a man versus a woman in some cases is different. There are companies now that make gender-specific implants. It's an ongoing debate in the orthopedic community right now whether or not gender-specific implants, namely implants specifically designed for women, make a clinically relevant difference. I don't think we have enough data to prove that that matching the bone more carefully and making it fit more precisely translates into clinically relevant improvement in outcome. Having said that, I think most surgeons would like implants that fit better. And I think most patients, given the choice and between two implants, one that fits right and one that is a little bit off, if you will, would choose to have an implant that fit their knee properly. And so in my own practice, I use gender-specific implants for women. The interesting thing is that not every woman, though, has an has a femur shape, for example, that fits the gender device better than the unisex device. So I think it's really a matter of trying to customize as best you can.
Yeah, tailor for the individual.
Exactly.
And one more question regarding the prevention or the prevalence. Is there a major genetic component to bone and joint deterioration?
There is some genetic component. When it comes to hip arthritis, the most common reason for patients to develop hip arthritis is related to disorders that happened in childhood. So in some patients, the hip socket doesn't form properly, or they have a problem with their growth plate on the upper end of their femur when they're growing up. That process is called slip capital femoral epiphysis, or skiffies.
Take me an extra semester just to learn to pronounce some of these words.
To pull out some technical aspects. I don't want to overwhelm the listeners with a whole lot of technical detail,
right.
But understanding that there are problems that happen as your hip develops, for some patients that sets them up over the course of decades to have early wear of their cartilage and ultimately degenerative arthritis of the hip. Those disorders represent the majority of underlying problems that result in arthritis. There are some cases where patients have genetic abnormalities that result in cartilage that's not normal and that wears out early. The majority of arthritis of the hip is related to biomechanical problems that set the hip up for early degenerative arthritis. Some of those do have genetic components. In the knee, it's a little less clear. Why do some patients become bow-legged? Why do some patients become knock-kneed? And why do some patients' cartilage wear out early, whereas others don't, is not entirely clear. So I think we understand knee arthritis a little bit less. It is clear, though, that obesity is probably the single most important variable that can result in early degenerative arthritis of the knee, and it's probably the most preventable.
Well, I'll tell you this, Dr. Ilgun, no matter what specialty sits in the seat that you're sitting in and sharing his or her expertise, it always gets down to those daily lifestyle decisions of what we're doing, what we eat, the amount of exercise, how we maintain our body, which is a key component from any aspect of health, it seems, from head to toe. And certainly, as what you're saying in the world of orthopedics. And our guest today on All About Living is Dr. Richard Ilgun. He is a board certified in orthopedic surgery, and he specializes in adult reconstructive surgery of the hip, knee, and shoulder at the University of Wisconsin Hospital and Clinics. This segment of All About Living is brought to you by Turville Bay MRI and Radiation Oncology Center in Madison, where expertise with compassion is powerful medicine. You're listening to All About Living on Madison 1670 WTDY. I'm Carol Kobe, and we'll be back with more of our conversation with Dr. Ilgun after these messages. Welcome back to our program. This segment is brought to you by Gunderson Funeral and Cremation Care, the Life Celebration Center, and Home Health United. You got a friend right here, online at homehealthunited.org. We're talking about knees and hips and joints and what can happen to them throughout life, whether they deteriorate, they're injured. And our guest today with all of the expertise is Dr. Richard Ilgen, and he is board certified in orthopedic surgery, specializes in adult reconstructive surgery of the hip, knee, and shoulder at University of Wisconsin Hospital and Clinics. And if you would like to join in the conversation, if you have any questions for Dr. Ilgen, please don't hesitate to call. Phone number is 321-1670. 321-1670 or *123 on your U.S. cellular phone. Also, this program will be available on www.carolcobyradio.com. Carol Coby, K-O-B-Y, radio.com. And that will be posted by the beginning of the week, so you can access this program or tell any of your friends or family or anybody that you see limping down the street about it, that they just might learn something. It's very difficult, Dr. Ilgen, to sometimes know where to go or what to do. And how does one go about selecting a medical individual or team to go to be assessed properly and have the right action taken?
Well, the choice of a physician is always a very personal one. I think that there are many factors that go into trying to choose who is going to provide you with the medical care to hopefully optimize your chance of having a good outcome, because ultimately that's what this is all about. If you have an arthritic problem that's causing you significant impairment in your quality of life, and you simply can't do what you want to do or need to do, you'd like to work with somebody who is going to provide with you with the best chance possible to return to near normal function. And there are several factors that probably play into that decision. Probably the most important of which is the experience of the team that you're going to be working with from top to bottom. So the hospital that you choose to go to and the surgeon that you choose to work with need to have a certain level of expertise and experience in order to provide you the best chance to get a good outcome. And experience matters. It matters no matter where you go, no matter what you do. Mm-hmm. And it certainly matters.
In any field.
In any field. And it's not, it's an intuitive thing, and it absolutely has been proven by science that the more you do of something, the better you get at it. So if you're a patient and you're going out and you're considering having a knee or a hip replacement, I think it's very important for you to talk to the surgeon and ask simple questions about how many of these do you do a year? How many does your hospital do a year? And one of the things that we know with reasonable certainty is that if the hospital and the surgeon do more than 100 a year, so if your surgeon is doing more than 100 hip replacements and more than 100 knee replacements a year, they're in the upper echelons of volume-related factors. So if you do a lot of that type of surgery, and a lot is defined as about 100, then your chance of outcome is going to be greater. In addition to that, specialized training. It's not just being able to do a lot, but do you really understand the nature of the problem well enough that you can handle the full spectrum of disease? And that really boils down to, is your physician fellowship trained in joint replacement? So if you're a patient and you walk into your doctor's office and you're thinking about having a hip or knee replacement, ask him, how many procedures does the hospital perform a year? How many procedures do you perform per year in that specific area? How many hip replacement, how many knee replacement? And are you fellowship trained in joint replacement? Did you spend an extra year of your life doing nothing but hip and knee replacement by a world leader in joint replacement, such that when you're done, you can provide the best information possible and the best surgical expertise possible that hopefully then translates into the best outcomes for the patients?
And there are different choices within those categories. Take the hip and the knee, for example. There's total hip replacement, and then there's the hip resurfacing that I just think emerged. Didn't the FDA approve it in 2006?
That's correct.
So that's been on the horizon less than a decade in the United States anyway. And now knee replacement is getting into the same arena of change or options. With the hip replacement and the hip resurfacing, I've been reading a little, and I don't certainly have your expertise, but there's been some disappointment regarding hip resurfacing?
Well, I think that like any surgical procedure, it is important to perform careful patient selection to achieve optimal outcome. And what does that really mean? It means doing the right surgery in the right patient. And whenever any new technology is introduced, I do think there is the possibility of overenthusiasm. Mm-hmm. In other words, boy, this sounds great. It must be great for everybody.
Well, the miracle procedure has arrived.
Has arrived. We have now solved the problem.
Right.
And rarely is that true in any area of medicine. It's also true in orthopedics, that choosing the right patient, the right surgery, and having the right surgeon perform it largely that those are major predictors of good outcome. So I do think that in some cases, hip resurfacing has enjoyed a level of enthusiasm that may be greater than what is fully warranted. I also continue to be an enthusiast for hip resurfacing for the right patient. And what we've learned over the last few years is that in young active male patients, particularly with good bone quality, hip resurfacing remains a tremendous procedure, restoring great quality of life, high level of function, and it's also a very conservative procedure that spares a lot of bone. So I don't want to give you the impression that hip resurfacing is a bad operation. It's not at all. And in fact, I continue to perform hip resurfacings for the right patient, and I think it's a great procedure. However, for the lower, for the older patient with poor bone quality, particularly women with small bones and small hip sockets, that may not be the best procedure for that subset of patients for lots of different reasons. Their risk of femoral neck fracture is higher. There is a risk of something called a pseudotumor where they form large fluid collections around their hip joint. And there's also a subset of patients that are metal allergic. So some of these hip resurfacings and some of these large head metal on metal devices have failed, and they failed at a slightly higher rate than with traditional hip replacements. So it goes back to choosing the right patients and having that procedure performed with a high level of expertise. And if you do that, you can reliably expect great outcomes. But performed in the wrong patients and maybe not performed technically ideally, the rate of revision and rate of failure is going to be higher.
So it takes a really intense conversation to figure out what the right fit is between the procedure and what your condition is. And the risk from, is this true that the risk in, say, resurfacing was the choice and it turned out not to be a good choice, that later on in life you're going to have repeat surgery when you're older, which puts you at higher risk too.
Absolutely. So the whole idea with joint replacement is try and do it once, do it right, and hopefully not have to do it again for a very, very long time. Revision surgery, meaning redo operations, are always met with higher rates of complication, whether they be infections, dislocations, or other medical complications. Redo operations are always more difficult and therefore have higher rates of complications. So choosing the right patient, performing that surgery carefully, and minimizing their chance for revision surgery is an important piece to joint replacements.
Now, in the area of the hip, and I mean the knee, and I know you do a lot of knee replacements, there's a new procedure out that's, it sounds similar to the hip resurfacing concept where it's a partial knee replacement, and the procedure is called Makoplasty, and that's the one where you use the robotic arm?
That's correct.
Yes, and can you explain that?
This is a very exciting time, I think, in knee replacements. One of the things that affects, we talked a little bit about what affects good outcomes in hip and knee replacement, and certainly surgeon experience and hospital experience matters. But even in a very skilled surgeon's hands, achieving optimal alignment after knee replacement is particularly important. And let's talk a little bit about partial knee replacement, for example. Your knee has three basic parts, a medial compartment or inside part of your knee, the lateral compartment or outside part of your knee, and then your kneecap or patellofemoral joint. Those three parts can wear out either completely, and in those patients, most of the time, total knee replacement is required, or it can just be part of the knee that wears out. So say you're 50 years of age and your knee has been fine until relatively recently, and you start to wear out the inside part of your knee to the point where it's really bone on bone on the inside part of your knee, but the rest of the knee is totally fine. That patient, if they fail a course of non-operative care, might be a candidate for what's called a partial knee replacement or unicompartmental knee replacement. That has actually been around for 30 or 40 years. That's not a new concept, but has gained in popularity probably over the last 10 years, particularly for that young active patient who doesn't really need a total knee replacement, but wants to improve their quality of life. And partial knee replacement in that particular subset may be a great option because it's bone sparing. It restores a more normal knee function than a total knee replacement can. There's less bone loss, a quicker return to recovery, and quicker return to a more normal lifestyle. So it's a great set of circumstances for that particular individual. By the way, it can also be a great option for the older patient who truly has unicompartmental knee arthritis. All those same advantages are also true if you're 65 or 70 years of age. So since I started my practice in 2000, partial knee has always been an important piece to my own practice because I do think patients, when they're properly selected, end up with a knee that's more normal if you can do a partial knee. And in my own practice and around the world, if you look at large numbers, about 10% of patients are good candidates for partial knees.
That's not too many.
It's not too many, but if I do about 150 knee replacements a year, that's still 15 to 20 patients a year that in my own practice that are candidates. And if you look at 800,000 total knee arthroplasties in the United States, that's still 80,000 people that are good candidates for partial knee replacements. So the reason that partial knees and total knees fail over time, at least one of the reasons, is if you don't achieve optimal alignment, meaning correcting a crooked leg back to a straight leg, that if you leave them too crooked, they can fail over time at a higher rate. And so if you could achieve every single time optimal alignment, that would be wonderful for patients. So currently, until fairly recently, using more sophisticated tools has been not commonly employed in knee replacement, whether it be partial or total. And there are two pieces of technology I think that listeners need to understand. One is called navigation. And navigation is simply an ability to provide surgeons with a more sophisticated tool to measure in the operating room to achieve that optimal alignment that we were talking about. But then executing that plan with a more sophisticated tool, such as robotics, is very new. Navigation's been around for 15 or 20 years, but combining navigation with robotics has only been around for about 3 or 4 years. And so historically, how do we cut the bone? How do we actually prepare that bone for a joint replacement has been typically with saws, hammers, chisels, and fairly, I wouldn't say rudimentary, but...
You're like a carpenter.
Carpentry. My dad was a carpenter, so I know all about...
So it's in your genes.
It is in my genes. And so understanding how to use hammers, saws, and chisels is an important piece to sculpting the bone. But more recently, using more sophisticated robotic tools allows us to more reliably shape the bone more precisely than we've ever been able to do before. And the whole idea of this is if we could combine a very sophisticated way to measure the bone and understand what the alignment needs to be, combine that with a sophisticated tool to execute that plan every single time and make sure that as best we possibly can achieve that optimal alignment would be great. And it goes back to the idea of manufacturing. If you want to manufacture anything and you want to do it precisely with very few outliers, the way to do that is combining computer-assisted design, navigation, with robotics. And if you do that, your number of outliers are fewer, and hopefully what that translates into better outcomes for patients over time.
We're going to stop for a break, and when we come back, I want you to take us into the operating room and help us visualize exactly what happens using the robotic tool to assist you in this partial knee replacement surgery. Our guest today is Dr. Richard Ilgen, and he is board certified in orthopedic surgery, specializing in adult reconstructive surgery of the hip, knee, and shoulder at the University of Wisconsin Hospital and Clinics. You're listening to All About Living here on Madison 1670 WTDY. I'm Carol Kobe, and we'll be right back after these messages. And this segment of the program is brought to you by Independent Living, your connection to an independent life. Our guest today on the program is Dr. Richard Ilgen. And if you have a joint that's aching you, if your knee is bothering you, your hip, your shoulder, any of your joints, you might want to make a phone call and ask a particular question of Dr. Ilgen. He has a great deal of expertise. And we're talking about joint replacement today on the program. Our phone number is 321-1670. Or *123 on your U.S. cellular phone. This program will also be available on www.carolkobyradio.com. Carol Kobe, K-O-B-Y, radio.com. Dr. Ilgen, you were, before the break, telling us about the new procedure. The partial knee replacement actually has been around for about 30 years, you said. But there's a new procedure or method of doing the partial knee replacement using a robotic arm. And that's relatively new, and you are one of the physicians that is trained to do that, and you're doing that currently at UW Health.
That is absolutely correct.
Right.
We started about 8 months ago with the robotic-assisted partial knee replacement.
And that's called Makoplasty, right?
Makoplasty. So the company is called Mako Surgical, and the procedure is called Makoplasty. And it's combining navigation with robotics. And robotics is a process basically that allows the computer-assisted navigation in the operating room to be combined with a very precise way to prepare the bone. And to sort of take you into the operating room, if you will, for
yes, a minute. That's what we promised to do that. You were going to help us visualize what you do in the operating room. And if this is an actual robot standing there with this arm and the two of you are both sawing together or what?
Yeah, it's an interesting process. I'll try and paint a verbal picture as best I can of what actually goes on, because some people... really, I think any patient really kind of wants to understand, are you doing the surgery, doctor, or is the robot doing the surgery? How does this all work? And the idea is basically that prior to surgery, you have a CT scan, which is a very sophisticated way to take an X-ray, and that generates a three-dimensional model of your own knee. That information then is fed into a computer, and prior to surgery, we can much more precisely essentially execute the surgery in the virtual world. And my kids are constantly doing stuff in the virtual world, as most of us, I guess, are now with iPhones and iPads and any of a number of other electronic devices. But we can do that now with surgery and virtually do the surgery as many times as we want prior to actually performing the procedure. And I think that's quite helpful and quite useful to know exactly what size components we're going to use, where we want to place them in a very precise way. And once we decide exactly where we want those, then those are then sort of locked into the system. And then you want to sort of say, okay, here's what I want to achieve in terms of where I put those pieces in order to achieve the best outcome for that patient. What robotics does is allows you to execute that plan more precisely every single time. And the robot that we use is called the RIO, R-I-O robot. And that is essentially a device that is coupled with the computer. And you can think of it as a 6-millimeter burr. It's about the size of a pencil tip eraser. And that burr spins at a very high rate of speed, and it allows you to sculpt the bone and remove only that bone that you want to remove. And there's something called the haptic envelope, which is a little bit of a technical term, but the idea is that there's a certain amount of bone that you want to remove, and the computer will only allow you as the surgeon to turn the burr on and move that around. So I'm still the one running the burr, turning it on, turning it off, and actually removing the bone. But if I get to the edge of that haptic envelope, say the back of your knee,
mm-hmm.
It will literally stop and will not allow me to push it past that point.
Wow.
So it's extraordinarily safe, and much safer than we used to have with running burrs and rather running saws and chisels and things like that. So we can actually shape the bone not only more precisely but more safely than we ever could before.
Well, precision, accuracy, and the least invasive that you need to be. It sounds like. Susan is on the phone. We have a question for you.
Hello.
Hello, Susan, are you there?
Yes.
Welcome to the program. You have a question for Dr. Hilgen?
Yeah, this is very pertinent. I'm 57 years old, and an X-ray a few months ago showed up for something else on my knee, and the doctor said I have an early stage of arthritis in my knees, and it wasn't bothering me for a long time, and it seems like lately my knees have been bothering me. I'm a walker. It doesn't bother me when I walk. Is this a sign that maybe that I would need a knee replacement surgery?
Not necessarily. I think that knee arthritis is a spectrum of disease. For mm-hmm. some patients, when you reach a point where there's little or no cartilage left and the bone is grinding bone on bone,
mm-hmm.
those are typically the patients that are candidates for either partial or total knee replacement. And that has to be coupled with a significant impairment in your quality of life. So for patients that have significant pain that's altering their quality of life and impairs their ability to either do their job or enjoy life, if that's related to bone-on-bone contact, those are patients that are candidates for joint replacement. It sounds to me like your stage of disease is a little bit earlier,
mm-hmm.
where there's still some cartilage left in your knee.
Mm-hmm.
And although it does affect your quality of life to a certain degree, most of those types of patients are better candidates for non-operative care to at least begin with. And we haven't talked a lot about non-operative care, but non-operative care is usually physical therapy, anti-inflammatories like ibuprofen or any of a number of others, exercises to improve your strength. And in some cases, injections into the knee are sometimes beneficial. Things like Synvisc or viscose supplementation, which is essentially a lubricant for the knee to try and make your remaining cartilage work better. Those general recommendations are put forward to patients that have earlier stage disease? And it sounds to me like that may be where you are.
So at this point, like, should I go to my regular doctor and tell the symptoms, and then she would refer me to an orthopedic doctor?
It depends a little bit on how advanced your arthritis is.
Mm-hmm.
Many primary care physicians, as we mentioned a little bit earlier, about maybe 40% of the visits to primary care physicians are related to musculoskeletal complaints. So many primary care doctors are very capable of evaluating these initially and deciding, are you a candidate for physical therapy, anti-inflammatories, and maybe even Synvisc injections. A lot of primary care docs will do all those. However, if your disease is a little more advanced, they may refer you to an orthopedic doc. So I think the first step is wise to have a conversation with your primary care physician, perhaps have some x-rays performed to be able to more fully evaluate how far advanced the disease is, and then decide what's the best thing in your particular case. Is it to have continued care with your primary care physician if the stage is early and can be treated non-operatively, or if the disease is more advanced and you require referral to an orthopedic surgeon, that's something that your primary care doc may be able to provide better guidance.
So I should do something at this point before it gets any worse.
I think that's probably good advice.
Okay.
Yes, and I think your advice of going to your primary care physician and having some of these options available in your spectrum of knowledge so you can actually be a partner in this decision-making process and be very concise about the type of discomfort that you have, mm-hmm. what you're feeling it, when you're feeling it, so it helps better for an accurate diagnosis as well.
Well, thank you, and thank you for being on the having this doctor on the show. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for calling. We appreciate your calling. Thanks, Susan.
Yep, bye.
And that's a perfect example of patient partnership and an active participant in your own healthcare. And when you know that something is wrong going and working it out and being as knowledgeable as you can be so you can help, because isn't your best diagnostic tool the patient himself
Absolutely.
Or herself?
With all these sophisticated techniques we've talked about, medicine, and one of the reasons I love it so much is that it's a direct interaction with the patient, the history, asking patients questions,
mm-hmm.
the physical examination, carefully evaluating the joints in question, and basic plain x-rays, Roentgenograms. You know, there was a Dr. Roentgen back in Germany over 100 years ago that invented the x-ray. And those are still the basic tools that allow us to come to a diagnosis and provide a treatment plan for the vast majority of patients. So that's extraordinarily important.
Our guest today on All About Living, Dr. Richard Ilgen, a board-certified orthopedic surgeon from UW Hospital and Clinics. And we'll be right back with more of our program after these messages. You're listening to All About Living here on Madison 1670 WTDY. And we're into our final minutes with our conversation with Dr. Richard Ilgen, who is board-certified orthopedic surgeon from UW Hospital and Clinics. And we want to thank our wonderful sponsors of this program, Gunderson Funeral and Cremation Care, Turville Bay MRI and Radiation Oncology Center in Madison, Home Health United, The Medicine Shop Monona, Caring Beyond Prescriptions, and Independent Living, your connection to an independent life. Because of them, we are able to bring you such wonderful programs as Dr. Ilgen and his expertise today. Dr. Ilgen, you, when Susan called, she has a problem that you worked out, her going back to her primary physician and talking to her about options from the beginning. And we've been talking about the very sophisticated surgical procedures that are available now, particularly the Makoplasty, which is the partial knee replacement surgery using a robotic arm, and how accurate and precise and non-invasive you can be with this surgery now. Let's go back to the non-invasive and where to begin a little bit. If you're starting to have some aches and it's becoming a little uncomfortable, when is it time to really do something? I hear somebody, my cousin, for example, mentioned she has a sore knee, and it sometimes wakes her up in the middle of the night because mm-hmm. she just turns her leg wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And then she, you know, is startled awake because of the pain. And at what point do you go and begin to deal with it and not just say, because I think we used to say, oh, you know, I can live with it. I can live with it.
Sure.
What should we live with?
Well, you know, that's a very personal question. And there's a spectrum of response to that, as you might imagine. Some patients are somewhat averse to going to see their physician. You know, they They only go in when things are really, really bad. And I do think that early evaluation and intervention in some cases can really help people avoid having to have their knee replaced as they go forward. So exactly when to pull the trigger and get in to see either your primary care doc or go to see an orthopedic surgeon is something that's affected by how bad is the pain, how frequent is the pain, and how much is it impairing the person's quality of life. The more frequent the pain, the more severe the pain, and the more significant impact they're having in their quality of life, the more likely they are to seek out help from their primary care doc. Exactly where that cutoff is a little different for everybody. But I would encourage patients, if they're having significant pain and it's impairing their quality of life, to go ahead and have that conversation with their primary care doc, because there are a lot of great opportunities to improve quality of life. We talked about some today that involve surgery, some don't involve surgery, and in many cases, you can have an improvement in your quality of life without having a major surgical procedure. We're excited at the University of Wisconsin about the technical ability to provide these type of surgical procedures with more precision and hopefully improve outcome for patients over time.
You were saying during the break that this robotic arm that you're using in the Makoplasty surgery for the partial knee replacement, that you see in the months and the very near years to come that this is going to be used in other joints as well, and you're going to continue to have the opportunity to be more precise, more accurate, and less invasive.
Sure. We talked before about the fact that only 10% of patients are candidates for partial knees.
Mm-hmm.
And if 80,000 are done in the United States every year, there's a whole lot of other patients that might benefit from this technology. And we're fortunate at the University of Wisconsin to be at the forefront of this technology. And there'll be three centers in the United States starting in about December or January that will start doing hip replacements with this technology. Mayo Clinic, University of Wisconsin, and Harvard at the Massachusetts General Hospital will be three of the first centers in the country to start doing hip replacements with robotic-assisted surgery. And probably within a year after that, we'll start doing knee replacements, total knee replacements using robotic-assisted surgery. So
we're going to be one of the major centers
right here in Madison, Wisconsin.
I keep saying that we are so fortunate to be living in Wisconsin and have access to the cutting edge healthcare that we do. It's just amazing.
It's a great
quite
city.
A privilege.
It's a great city and a great place to live.
I have to bring up, we were looking at this picture from the New York Times earlier this morning. This was on the front page of the New York Times. Baseball's arm of the future. This Steven Strasburg, who is a 22-year-old rookie, and he's supposedly the pitcher of tomorrow, and with this elbow and everything, he's now going into surgery. That is an example of overuse and how careful we have to be, right?
Yeah, I think, too much of a good thing can be problematic. And you look at throwing athletes and how often they throw, how hard they throw, can have a significant impact on their rate of injury. He's one of a long list of throwing athletes that have had problems related to their shoulder. Pitchers particularly are at risk for these types of problems. I grew up in Chicago, and there was a good example of Mark Pryor and Kerry Wood, who were two great pitchers. The list of great pitchers from the Chicago Cubs is a fairly short list, but these guys were pretty good. Both of them ended up suffering injuries related to overuse. This is the latest example of somebody who was untouchable as a pitcher, but because he was pitching so fast and so frequently, has suffered an overuse injury, and it may very well impact his long-term career.
So for any of us involved or any young people involved in athletics, is it cumulative? If you injure yourself, are the injuries going to build upon themselves over years?
They can. I think that if you look at the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgery, which is our governing body, if you will, in orthopedic surgery, they have clearly recognized the risk for kids and adolescents when it comes to overuse injuries. And the sports medicine docs, the trainers and the athletic trainers that are involved on the front lines of taking care of kids all the way through high school and into college fully recognize that there are situations where overuse can be a real problem. And I think we do a much better job than we did even a decade ago with regard to helping to prevent these type of injuries in both throwing athletes and other types of sports as well.
Well, you are certainly a specialist in a growing field in medicine, and it's not going to go away. But let's review some of the principles of what people can do talking about being active partners in their own wellness and their own health care, to have to maintain the health of their bones and their joints and their muscular skeleton system?
So I guess it would start with diet and exercise. To try and maintain a healthy body, it goes back to the same thing Marcus Welby almost said, mm-hmm. you know, 100 years ago or whatever it was. But diet and exercise. So eat healthy. As far as bone health, calcium, vitamin D are important. If you're not getting enough of it in your diet, supplementation with calcium and vitamin D for many patients is a good idea. Maintaining close to your ideal body weight whenever possible. Obesity is probably one of the single most important healthcare risks for us going forward, whether it be related to arthritis of your knee or diabetes. If you're significantly overweight, it can really have a major impact in your overall health. So diet, exercise, maintaining a healthy lifestyle, and staying close to your ideal body weight are probably the most important things you can do to help avoid arthritis and maintain an active, healthy lifestyle.
Thank you so much, Dr. Richard Ilgen, for being our guest today on All About Living. You have informed us about a lot of aspects of our body and the hopeful things on the forefront that will continue to help us be active throughout all of our lives. And as we're all aging and the whole aging population is getting larger, we want to be healthy in that process and not be a burden on ourselves or society, but to be an active participant.
Well, thank you very much, Ben. It's been a pleasure being here today.
And thank our sponsors, Gunderson Funeral and Cremation Care, Turville Bay MRI and Radiation Oncology Center in Madison, Home Health United, The Medicine Shop Monona, and Independent Living. And thank you for listening. Thank you, Jason Stapleman, for once again doing such a fine job of keeping us on the air.